is an episode in Night School. And I should just keep that accent going through the whole episode because I'm going to be talking a little bit about the Mafia. The Mafia. A week ago today, I was about to go to bed, but I decided to check. Let me just say, too, I'm just completely obsessed with the Mafia, and I have been for about 15 years. I studied sociology in college, so I worked this interest into that. But it's been really an enduring passion of mine, and I feel like that's a very flowery way of talking about being interested in the mob. An enduring passion. What is your passion? Reading about the mob. FBI files, reading about these guys. No. It really has been. And I've researched it very deeply. I communicate online and over the phone with other researchers. It's really become a niche field now that a lot of the sensationalism has died away. But a week ago today, that sensationalism came back in a little spurt. Hey, Rosie, just go sleep. Just go sleep. Because Frank Cali was murdered. And Frank Cali was one of the top figures in the New York Mafia, in particular the Gambino family. And of course, the headlines were very sensationalistic. New York's mob boss, the Gambino family's boss, was murdered. And a nerd like me knows that he wasn't the boss. He was actually the number two man in the Gambino family. But I won't go into all that. I won't go into all the specifics. But I was about to go to bed that night a week ago, and I popped into the discussion forum that I've been a part of for many years as an active user, and I simply saw the title, the topic title, Frank Cali Shot Dead, and I did a double take, because either the night before or two nights before his murder, I'd been doing a little research into him, and he was somebody who I was very familiar with over the last number of years. I knew his basic background. I knew what his role was. He'd been a common topic of discussion when the modern mob comes up, and he was the liaison between the Sicilian Mafia and the U.S. Mafia. He had some connections to the Canadian groups. So he was really at the center of this network, and had a reputation as a gentleman, gangster, a businessman, but nonetheless a mafioso. So I'd been focusing on him specifically, though, a night or two before, doing some research into him that I hadn't done before. Even though I was very familiar with his name and who he was and what his role was in the mafia, I'd never really just sat there and done research into his background. So I did it kind of a double take when I saw that he had been shot dead. It was a little bit synchronistic, just a little bit synchronistic that I was digging into him, because those death synchronicities always hit you. Whenever those come up, I know on one of the very first Every Night's a School Night episodes, Phil Everly died after I did an episode highlighting the Everly brothers and talking about the Everly brothers. And it was similar to an experience I had had when Whitney Houston died, where some coworkers and I had a Whitney Houston party in our office where we played Whitney Houston that day, and she died that night. It's hard not to feel a little bit responsible when you are focusing on a certain person that you don't normally focus on, and they die immediately. It's hard not to feel some weird, sickening responsibility, psychic responsibility. But my actual feelings on that, you know, sure, you could say it's a mere coincidence, but what I actually believe when that happens is that you're somehow aware of something happening involving that person. I'm not going to say that people's deaths are predetermined at a certain time. I'm not going to say that it's fate and you're simply having some sort of psychic revelation regarding that fate. But I think there's something to that. I think there's something to you focusing on that person at that time. And it's not that you are willing that event to happen. It's that you're somehow just getting some kind of brief glimpse of it that's causing you to think about that person. So yeah, here's where Eric is just gone. He thinks that he had some sort of psychic revelation about a mafia leader's death a night or two before it happened. I do believe that, though. So call me crazy if you want. But that's not what's important. What's important is that this was big news. If you're like me and you closely follow the mafia, both historically, a lot of my personal research is historic. A lot of the discussions I have with friends and other researchers is mostly historic, but the modern day stuff is just as interesting to me, and I like to know what's going on in the mafia. So in a time when mafia murders are extremely rare, especially of high-ranking members, occasionally there's still the murder of an associate, and by that I mean someone who's not a member of the mafia but is considered an associate on record with them. Those still happen on occasion, but made members are almost never killed in the modern era, the last 20 or more years. However, there was a member killed in 2009, but that just shows you, like, the fact that it's been 10 years since a made member was killed shows you how much this event stands out, the murder of Frank Cali. So I was pretty fixed on this event, and I was planning on getting into bed that night and just reading my Wheel of Time book, page 800 of Wheel of Time, book 4. But I saw that, just that topic line, Frank Cali shot dead, and I knew what I was going to be reading about for the rest of the night. Let's just put it that way. But as information came out, and I'm not somebody who likes to speculate, I like to theorize, I like to think about things, I like to explore possibilities, but I don't like to wildly speculate on subjects when there's not much information to go on. But it certainly looked like a mafia murder. A high-ranking mafia member was murdered in front of his home in what seemed to be a staged hit. Someone ran into his car so that he would come outside, and security camera footage caught him shaking the driver's hand. This driver ran into Frank Cali's parked car, and he came out, and they talked. It showed him shaking this guy's hand. His license plate had been knocked off, so the driver handed Frank Cali the license plate, and as Cali went to go put his license plate in his car, the guy shot him. So it clearly wasn't a traffic altercation. It wasn't an altercation stemming from the accident, the quote-unquote accident, the very staged accident. So that really looked like a mob hit, even though in mob hits you typically see two shooters. There's usually what's called a crash car nearby that's there in case cops come on the scene. That car then runs into the cop car so that the actual shooters can get away. But still, aside from that, it really looked like a mob hit. But a few days later, they caught the suspect, who was a 24-year-old kid who lived on Staten Island, like Cali. And it turns out he had no mob connections. And the rumor, which seems to have been more or less substantiated, is that he was involved with Frank Cali's niece in some way. And it either wasn't going well, something, who knows what the actual story was between the niece and this shooter. But the story is that Frank Cali stepped in and told this guy not to date his niece. He somehow got in the middle of the situation. And the kid shot him to death as a result. And I don't know why Frank Cali would be involved in his niece's love life. I don't know what, you never really know. Frank Cali himself was born in the U.S., but his parents were from Sicily, and he married into a well-known Sicilian mafia family. So he was very much of that mold. He was considered a gentleman gangster. Even though he himself wasn't raised in Sicily, he definitely had that sort of upbringing. So he may have kind of had somewhat of a patriarchal role in his blood family. And when you consider his stature in the mafia, I could easily see him having that sort of role where maybe he would step in and give his niece advice on the kind of guys she should date. Or maybe this guy was stalking her. I don't really know the situation. But either way, it led to Frank Cali getting shot to death, and it had nothing to do with the mafia, it had, you know, nothing to do with anything except some weird personal situation. So it was pretty underwhelming, especially to those of us who follow this stuff. Because the fact is, the guy died. And even though he was a mafia member, you know, I don't want some guy to die. But because he was already dead, I was hoping it was going to be some sort of mafia storyline. If the man's already dead, he was shot to death, I was just hoping, for my own interest's sake, that it was going to be a mafia hit. But it turns out, no. It turns out it was just some weird thing. And as information has come out about the shooter, it turns out, ran some kind of pro-Trump meme conspiracy page on Instagram. He's part of some group that I've heard of in passing, but I don't really know the details of it. But it's basically kind of this group of conspiracy nuts who are pro-Trump, and they feel that there's a deep state conspiracy to smear Trump and get rid of him, basically. And this guy ran a meme page serving those beliefs. And then to just buttress that, while in court during his arraignment, this kid scrawled some shit on his hand in ballpoint pen, among other things, MAGA, M-A-G-A, and something about QAnon, which is the name of this conspiracy group. And I'm just stating the bald facts here. You know, I don't have an opinion on, I'm not going to paint this as, look at a Trump supporter shooting somebody. Oh, look at this. I'm not going to paint that picture with this. I'm simply stating the bald facts, which are, this kid was into that stuff, and he killed one of the top mafia leaders, not just in the USA, but I would say internationally, given Frank Cali's crucial role in the international mafia network, because it's very much a network. It's not simply individual organizations, but it's many different organizations that all fall under the mafia umbrella who work together. And Frank Cali, as a businessman, and someone who had a reputation as having maybe a particular charisma, was known for his role communicating with these different groups. So the fact that this kid, this type of kid, this crazy modern kid, he probably just texts all the time. I can just imagine. If he was involved with Frank Cali's niece, I bet they never talked on the phone. I bet they just texted all the time. A kid who runs any kind of meme Instagram page, especially one that's, you know, political, I imagine he just loves to text. He's not the kind of guy, he's not a real man who likes to talk on the phone. He texts all the time. So he killed a mob leader, though. He killed a big-time mob guy, and that's just, it's the world we live in. That's all I'm saying, is it's the world we live in today that this happens. And there are a million other signs that this is the world we're in. This is the world we're in, and I feel like we're in a period of recalibration. As my friend Miles said, he feel this is a false paradigm shift, because there was a feeling over the last few years that something is changing, something has been exposed, and something is changing. That we are undergoing some kind of massive shift in consciousness. A change in trends, that there's some sort of wave moving. And there was a feeling among certain people that this represented a paradigm shift. And my friend Miles, you know, somewhat joking, just said it's a false paradigm shift. And I do think he's right. I think it takes a level of hubris to say we're experiencing a paradigm shift. And then most people you know are going to be like, well, what the fuck is a paradigm shift? And with that in mind, what's the difference between a paradigm shift and a false paradigm shift anyway? If something is changing, if something is happening, if there's, you know, some sort of shift in consciousness at all, or if we even think there's even if we have the illusion that there's some kind of shift in consciousness happening, isn't that enough anyway? So what is the difference between a false paradigm shift and a paradigm shift? I don't know. I don't know, and that's not really my language, but I will say I feel like there is some sort of calibration or recalibration going on, and I could try to come up with some sort of joke or pun, since the mob guy who got killed was Frank Cali, calibration, but beyond just saying that, I can't come up with a good joke. But I do feel calibration is a good way to think of it, or rather recalibration. I feel like things are being realigned. Along what, I don't know, but it feels like this particular moment, and by this moment I mean the last 2 or 3 years, It doesn't necessarily coincide with the last presidential election, but I feel everything leading up to it. Let's say the last 5 years. Let's just be generous and say 2013 to now. To me, it has felt like some sort of shift, some sort of change, and I feel that I've had to react to it as an individual, but I've also seen many people reacting to it. I've seen many people sort of realign themselves, both within and with who they are in the outside world. And I don't mean realign themselves politically, although I think that is happening too. I think people have lost a lot of their political identity, and that's good. I think that's a good thing. I think things have to be shaken up in terms of belief, in terms of ideology. So I think it's a good thing if we recalibrate ourselves politically and hopefully get rid of the existing language and terminology and boundaries we have around politics. You know, for me personally, you know, I don't know that this recalibration is, you know, going to set us on one particular path or another. I don't know what it's going to spell out. I just feel like something is shifting. It's almost like there's this chiropractor who's just kind of like, you know, figuring out different parts of your spine he can pop and shift, and just some of it's gradual, some of it's immediate. And the end result is we're just going to find out chiropractors are a scam and nothing changed at all. I'm just a little bit sore. I don't know. But this whole idea of the mafia being in the media again, articles about the mafia, are both exciting but also disappointing. Because I like to see a continued interest in that subject, because I want more books, I want more mafia discussion. It's something I like to discuss, so why would I not want the world around me discussing it? But there are also so many myths, and there's so much misinformation related to it. And I won't go into that, because I've seriously considered starting a mafia podcast. And my friend Angelo, he's a deep researcher, Angelo Santino, he wrote an excellent article for Informer Journal in 2014, May 2014 issue, which focused on the early New York Mafia. And by early, I mean mid-1800s, way before people even previously believed there were mafia groups in the United States. He was able to uncover some excellent information with his co-authors. And he and I have talked about starting some projects, one of which a couple years ago was a YouTube channel where we would do videos. But I just don't think we have the resources to justify that effort. I don't think we would be able to find enough actual visual content to make it interesting. And my idea has always been to do a podcast, and there's not really anything like that out there. There's one guy who does sort of a pseudo radio show about the mob, but he's just this kind of wannabe. He's this non-Italian who pretends he's Italian and acts like he's sharing some kind of insider information that he just reads online or hears about online. So extremely lowbrow bullshit would be the only competition. You know, if I were to do a show, it would no doubt be lowbrow, but it would not be bullshit, I'll say that. But it would be completely separate from this, and it's something I've rolled around in my brain because I would want it to be well-researched. I would want it to have basis in fact and to not do any service to the many myths that have surrounded the mafia pretty much as long as it's been in public awareness. But I would also want it to be off the cuff. I would want it to be to offer interesting and factual information, but to also be off the cuff and not too stiff. So it's something I've considered. It's something I've considered because that subject is just endlessly interesting to me. And we're living in a time when there are fewer mob movies. There's, you know, The Sopranos sort of killed that. The Sopranos sort of killed the idea of doing Italian mafia shows and movies. And there have still been some, but they've been mostly B movies. And The Sopranos is the best show ever. Come on, you know, it's really the best show ever. I rewatched it last year, and it stood up as well as anything. And it truly did start this trend that hasn't even come close to fading of movie-like, movie-quality TV shows in hour installments on HBO and other channels. And those sorts of shows have really beaten movies out. They've beaten all their TV shows out because you're basically getting a short movie every week. And what ends up happening is you have these much more advanced, complex, and interesting storylines spread out over a season. So you're basically getting a very large movie with little intermissions in between. And I feel like The Sopranos really started that. I used to think it was Oz. I used to think it was the show Oz. And I watched, I think, the first two seasons of Oz. And it's a good show. It's been a while since I've seen it. But I used to think that that was the show that really started this trend of movie-like premium TV shows. But if you rewatch Oz, it's really like watching Law and Order on steroids. It feels dated. You feel like you're watching something that's very dated, and it has that exact same feeling you get from Law and Order, which isn't a bad feeling. I think Law and Order is great. Not a huge fan. I had an ex-girlfriend who was obsessed. Like, she was completely, like, the way I'm obsessed with the mafia, she was obsessed with Law and Order. And it was a good show, though. I enjoyed watching it just in passing. But Oz just feels like that, whereas I rewatched The Sopranos last year all through, from episode one to the final episode, and it holds up. Even in the later season when, you know, there are some wishy-washy storylines, some stuff that I wouldn't have written it, it still holds up extremely well, and I would still say it's one of the best TV shows of all time. The best. Up there with Happy Days, I Love Lucy, I'm sure I'm forgetting a few things, Taxi. Absolutely, Taxi. Those are some of the best TV shows I've ever seen. And I've seen Game of Thrones. That's a great one, too. I loved Game of Thrones. I've seen all the episodes that have been out so far, and I've seen them once, so I haven't rewatched Game of Thrones. And I haven't watched some of the other popular series that came in the wake of The Sopranos. I saw a few episodes of Breaking Bad, but nothing really holds a candle to The Sopranos. But the Sopranos really killed the idea of doing a mob show or a mob movie. And art imitates life, though. In The Sopranos, there was that episode where Chris Moltisanti is very jealous of his friend, who's an even lower-level mob associate than he is, because his friend got mentioned in the papers as a mob associate. And Chris is very jealous because he's never been mentioned in the papers. But then at the end of the episode, he does get mentioned. There's a newspaper article that mentions Chrissy, as a mob associate, and he goes out and he looks at the paper. He wakes up and he finds that newspaper and he gets very excited. And is it called a newspaper machine? Those, you know, you put the quarter in, you open that little door, and there's all the newspapers in there. I guess you'd call that a newspaper machine. I don't know what to call it. The newspaper box. But once he realizes that he's mentioned in that paper, he goes to buy a newspaper from the box and he takes them all. He wants all the copies of that. And that's very realistic. As someone who's, you know, seen, who pays attention to pretty much every mob court case, both past, present, and future, but especially in the last couple decades, that's very representative of the mobster's mindset. They want to read about themselves. They love movies where they love identifying with the movies. They love reading about themselves. There's a very well-known article that's been around, I think, since the 80s, Gangland News. It used to be in the New York Daily News. And the writer, Jerry Capici, he has followed the mafia closely as a beat reporter, I guess you could call him, for decades. And he's, you know, one of the foremost experts into the New York mafia in particular. And it used to be in newspapers. Gangland News used to be a column he would write in the New York Daily News, I believe it was. But in recent years, it's just an online subscription. He has a website, and you can subscribe to it. And it came out in a recent case, very recent, that one of the top members of the Bonanno crime family and another top member were recorded discussing Gangland News. And that itself wasn't groundbreaking, because There had been numerous instances where mobsters were either recorded or seen. There was one example in court where a mobster wanted to make sure that he got a copy of the New York Daily News because it had gangland in him. So the gangsters themselves, they're such gossips. They love to gossip about other mobsters. They love to read about other mobsters. They're fans of it as much as they are participants. And there was a case, an example where a guy in court like made sure to get his copy of New York Daily News because he wanted to read Gangland. But to even take it up a notch, I said this is the world we live in, where a mobster is killed by a kid who runs a pro-Trump conspiracy meme page, social media page. Just to frame things around that's the world we live in. These two top Bonanno members were recorded sharing their Gangland News subscription password, because you have to log into the Gangland News site with a password. And I don't have an account myself, surprisingly. I know some people who do, who thankfully share it, so I'm able to read it just through that. I got connections. no shared passwords, though. Totally legal, as far as I know. I don't share passwords. I don't borrow passwords. But these mobsters certainly did. Two top members of the Bonanno family were recorded. He's asking the other guy for his Gangland News password so that he can log into the site and read the latest article. Pretty incredible. These guys are very modern. They're logging in. And that's what we see, though. There was an example in the same court case. It came out that one of the government witnesses, he had turned government witness after he had been badly beaten. Because that's one thing, is that the mob has had somewhat of a moratorium on committing murders in recent decades. There was actually a ruling in the 90s where they said, we're not going to commit any murders for a while because it was causing too many members to get life sentences, too many members to start cooperating with the government. Members who didn't want to serve life sentences would then cooperate to get their terms shortened. So they decided to cut down on murders. And there've still been a few here or there, but they really don't do them at any kind of regular rate like they did. If you look back in the 80s and the 70s and then earlier, mob murders were always happening. But they do still beat people. There are still vicious beatings, and it seems like that kind of keeps their violent reputation going. And this member was badly beaten, or he wasn't a member, he was an associate, but he was badly beaten, so he decided to testify against the members who beat him up. But it came out that one of the reasons they beat him up is because he was on Facebook talking shit about how one of the mobsters had a mixed-race grandchild. And these guys, they're very... They tend to be very conservative, very unapologetically racist, almost to a T. I've studied these guys for a very long time, and even in today's world, they're all Trump supporters. That is just a fact. I'm sure there's probably one or two who aren't. And I'm just stating a bald fact. I'm not saying this to disparage anybody or disparage Trump supporters at all. It's just an interesting phenomena we see where they were all Bush supporters too. So that's what's interesting about Frank Cali, who himself was probably a Trump supporter, getting killed by this rabid conspiracy Trump meme kid. Anyway, so this guy was badly beaten, and part of that was because he had been trashing the mixed-race granddaughter of one of the mobsters. And there was another case a few years ago involving the New Jersey crime family, where this guy, he was a captain in that family, silver-haired, straight out of Central Casting, jogging suit. He looked like Polly Walnuts from The Sopranos, that kind of guy. But his son was an associate of the family, and his son was this morbidly obese wigger. And you see that a lot, where some of the low-level guys in this generation are just these... They look like Insane Clown Posse fans, or they look like, they're like white gangsters, sideways hat, that sort of thing. People who grew up in rap culture, that sort of vibe. And so this guy's son was, even though this guy was very much exactly what you'd expect out of a New Jersey mob captain, even though that was the case, his son was just, you know, this, oh man, I don't even know, this just bloated wigger. It was strange, but not that surprising. But anyway, there's a recorded conversation that came out in that case where the father and son are talking about a problem they had with another member of the New Jersey family from another crew, and they were planning to kill him. And the son sent, he calls his dad and he says, they sent me a text like insulting me, and he was just pissed off. The guy who they wanted to kill sent this son a text insulting him. and he said they sent him some kind of picture too of them. And my only guess is that they sent him some kind of like selfie of them all, like, who knows, giving the, I don't know what it was. I imagine it's just like, it's like one of those selfies of a group just meant to insult him. I don't know. But it also came out that there were Facebook messages exchanged as part of this back and forth. So not just text messages, not just sending pictures back and forth insulting each other, but there was also some sort of Facebook message containing insults. So once again, it's just the world we live in. You know, there might have been a point in time generations ago when phones were introduced, where some mafia guy called another guy and insulted him over the phone, and some even older mafia guy, maybe to him that was what text messaging seems like now. Maybe that's what Facebook seems like now. Maybe we just haven't had time to adjust to these things like social media. There could have been some old school, you know, off the boat mafia guy who heard about some exchange over the phone and just thought, oh man, these kids. These kids, like, what are they doing talking shit over the phone? That might have been texting back then, you know, or how texting seems now. I don't know. But it's just the world we live in. And there's something about men that no matter what, no matter how much changes, no matter how much the world seems to shift, our consciousness shifts, we like to belong in gangs and clubs, even when those clubs don't have a name. We just naturally kind of form them. And I had this experience as a kid. I was on the playground. There was this kid about a year younger than my friends and I, and he approached us. And he wasn't a friend of ours, not even really an acquaintance, but in elementary school, you kind of know most kids. I think he was on maybe my friend's soccer team, something like that. And he said, hey, I want you guys to join my club. I don't remember if it was a club or a gang, but it was something like that. And he said, if you join my club, I'll give you these free trading cards tomorrow. And he told us some kind of cards he was going to give us, maybe Marvel cards. That was popular at the time. And we agreed. We were like, sure, that's a pretty good incentive. And he actually had us write down our names on this list. He had a list of people joining his club, which I should have known right then. Anybody who's going to have you write your name down on a list is a fucking rat, right? But anyway, he told us that. And the next day we saw him and we were like, oh, you have those cards? And he was like, no, I'll bring them at the end of the week. He never brought them, and the club never came up again. Maybe in like 10 years I'm going to get a call from that kid and he's going to say, hey, remember when you joined my club? I need a favor from you. Maybe that's going to happen. And maybe I'm going to grant that favor. Maybe I'm going to be all about that club. Because I'm not in enough clubs. I'm not in enough gangs. And I do feel the draw toward them. And the mafia is, you know, sort of the ultimate club or gang. And I just have to preface that by saying, or follow that up by saying, I don't think the mafia is cool in and of itself. It's an interesting organization because my interest in it is almost like glorified genealogical research. There's a lot of looking at what hometown someone's grandparents came from and how this guy intermarried with that guy and how he's the nephew of so-and-so. It's a lot of that sort of stuff because the early mafia was very much based on those kinds of relationships. You know, Paisans from the same village in Sicily who had some sort of connection through marriage. Those were the sorts of guys who joined the mafia together. And a good way of looking at the mafia is not simply as organized crime, but it was a group that was established to basically gain any advantage it could over any resource available in order to profit its own group, in order to profit its own people. So that included crime, but it also included legitimate business, and there's plenty of examples, especially early on, of guys who were otherwise legitimate businessmen who used the mafia network to gain influence and make money and enhance both the organization's network, but also their own personal network. But they really weren't committing crimes. But you also see guys during that same era who were vicious killers and out-and-out criminals. And the mafia included both. And just because they had some legitimate businessmen, because they had some doctors, there are some confirmed examples of doctors, practicing doctors who were members. So you have these guys who were, you know, really fully legitimate citizens. But just because you had them doesn't mean you didn't also have the criminals. It was this sort of umbrella, and it was very cultural. And I think a great example of that culture is in Sammy Gravano's book. And Gravano was actually held the same position that Frank Cali had, the underboss of the Gambino family. And Gravano ended up testifying against John Gotti, and he later wrote a book, and his daughter did that Mob Wives show. But Gravano, in his book, he talks about growing up in Bensonhurst, which coincidentally, again, is where Frank Cali grew up. But he talks about growing up in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, and his father, who was a Sicilian immigrant, was not a mob member, not a mob associate, but he knew those guys. And his father one day pointed those guys out. He pointed the mafiosi out, and he said, you know, don't approach them. They're bad people, but remember that they are our bad people. They are our bad people. I think that's a good way of explaining it. His dad didn't condone, he didn't endorse these guys. He didn't endorse the mafia. He didn't want his son to get involved in that, and he failed horribly at that. But he didn't want his son to get involved, but he still saw them as his people and would probably take their side over, say, the U.S. government, over law enforcement. He probably wouldn't rat those guys out if faced with some kind of questioning by police or some other governing body. But at the same time, he didn't condone or endorse them. It's sort of an immigrant mentality, and you still see that play out in certain communities. But the mafia is very unique in comparison to other organized crime groups. And you'll see the word mafia thrown around in reference to the Russians, in reference to different ethnicities. But mafia is very specific to the Italians, and specifically the Sicilians, because the mainland Italian groups are, you know, similar but quite a bit different from the original Sicilian group that the U.S. is, that the U.S. organizations are modeled after. You know, there was a lot of, it was sort of a melting pot after a certain point of time where any Italian could join the mafia in the U.S., but they're based on that original Sicilian mafia group, which is different than the Calabrians and Neapolitan groups. But anyway, you see where it's, there was this sort of, it fit into this Sicilian culture where they were their own people, and the mafia itself included people who really were not criminals, but it expected those people to cooperate with the criminals, and the criminals often came to dominate those organizations. Because the man, you know, you got to respect the man with the gun, even if you don't want to. That's just a rule, an unfortunate rule of life. And, you know, as things have changed, you know, the mafia has become very much a form of entertainment, really. You know, it's such a common storyline. I mentioned The Sopranos, but all of the movies, all of the classic American movies that tell mafia stories, you know, I think those in turn influenced the mafia itself. And the members saw those movies and they started acting like what they saw in those movies. And there are many examples of that. Many mafia members themselves, former mafia members, have talked about seeing The Godfather and how they started carrying themselves in that fashion after seeing it. So, you know, the real mafia and that culture fed into something like The Godfather, but then that fed back into the culture and the mafia. So it's an interesting sort of feedback loop. And many things work that way. There's a lot of things that play out that way in life. It's not just mafia movies influence. There's a reason why that whole thing about art imitating life and life imitating art is such a not a cliche, but there's a reason why that comes up so often. There's a reason why that's referenced so often. It's because it's true in many different situations, many different subjects. But the mafia is one of those, a big one. But what is it about men that need to start these groups? You know, because I was talking about that kid who just wanted to start a club or a gang on the playground. And my friends and I actually kind of started our own gang later in elementary school. We didn't call ourselves by any names, but we definitely saw ourselves as a gang. And there were about four or five of us who were the core of that gang. And we weren't bullies, but we definitely inflicted some terror on the playground. We didn't really fight. You know, we were raised in this generation where fighting is strongly discouraged, so we didn't want to get in serious trouble. There was a moratorium on fighting. We didn't want to get life sentences for fighting on the playground. But we did think and act very much like a gang, but we didn't call ourselves anything. And I kind of like that because it's almost in that mafia sort of idea where the true mafia doesn't even have a name. It came to be called La Cosa Nostra, which is grammatically incorrect. The FBI started calling it La Cosa Nostra. And they took Cosa Nostra from the mafia because the members themselves had started referring to their group as Cosa Nostra or Our Thing. But they used that casually and not formally. It's like saying, hey, you know, is he part of Our Thing? It was a way of not naming the group. But as the FBI started to investigate them more, as more information came, the FBI heard about this. Oh, Cosa Nostra. La Cosa Nostra. And so the FBI formalized it, but they must not have spoken Italian because La Cosa Nostra would mean the Our Thing. The Our Thing. It's like if they called the Our Gang show the Our Gang. You know, it just doesn't work. It's not. It's grammatically incorrect. But over time, this is a great example of art imitating life and life imitating art. Many mafia members themselves today will refer to their group as La Cosa Nostra. And the FBI still refers to it that way, LCN. Many FBI reports will write LCN, but it's not the actual name of the organization, not originally. And even the term mafia, which was a term that the actual organization did use, but it, again, wasn't necessarily a formal name. The former mafia boss Joe Bonanno, who later wrote a book, he described the word mafia as sort of, it basically meant machismo. It basically meant manhood. So when guys referred to mafia, they were talking about the organization and the attitude of the organization, but it essentially meant, is he a man? And of course, not all men were part of the mafia, but it was sort of a general term. There was sort of a vagueness to it. It wasn't as simple as, is he part of the mafia? There was something kind of general about it, sort of like Our Thing. So it's interesting that this is a group that had no name, yet it's one of the most infamous groups out there. It's definitely the most infamous organized crime group in the world. Yet it truly doesn't have a name, yet it's been kind of given names, and even the members themselves have taken on these media names, these law enforcement names. But as much as I don't look up to these guys, I don't think the mafia is cool. You know, there's things that are cool about it, in the same way that there are things that are cool about pro wrestling and cool about, you know, other things that are interesting to me. there are definite similarities, by the way, between a lot of mafia members and pro wrestlers. There's that caricature. They're almost caricatures. Central casting. They're like something that could only be scripted, yet they're real. And it's almost like what I've said about pro wrestlers and their personas, where a guy starts acting a certain way because he wants to play that character, but then the more that he plays that character, the more he becomes that character. And I think that's absolutely the case with mafia guys. I think that they want to start acting like a gangster, so they play that role, and then before they know it, that's just them. And before they know it, they basically are Polly Walnuts from The Sopranos. But that idea of not naming your group, I do like that. I think that's something that I would definitely give the mafia some praise for. Like, if the group exists, why do you need to name it? Because people love giving their gang a name. Yeah, it makes them feel cool. We're the gravelly road boys. We're the Thompson Lake boys. We're the shadows. You look at a movie like The Warriors, which is about gangs, and they all have cool names and outfits and jackets. And you see bikers do that. Bikers love to have an insignia, because having an insignia is cool. When you and your friends all wear the same leather vest, you know, you feel cool. You feel like you're a part of something. But I think it's even cooler to not have that. I think it's even cooler to have no name and just to know that you're part of a gang or know that you're part of a club. But clubs, they don't really exist as they used to. And I think the internet kind of served as the modern-day social club for my generation. Because social clubs, while they were operated by the mafia in many cases in big cities, they weren't exclusively mafia. You know, not every social club was run by the mafia, and there are still social clubs today. It's just something men have a need to do. There's a club where men can go and they can play cards and talk and gossip, because men do gossip. Despite whatever people say about women being bigger gossips, men do gossip. It's slightly different. We have our own ways of doing it, but men do gossip a lot. That's some hot gossip for you. My hot gossip is that men gossip. But men do have a need to have these groups, these clubs. If it's not simply a physical place they can go, it's a group they can meet with. You look at the Elks Club, the Eagles Club, all these things where men wore little hats. There were clubs based around business, based around social, based around, you know, in Astoria, Oregon, which is not far from here, they still have a Finnish social club. Because many of the settlers were from Finland in Astoria, Oregon. So you have this Finnish social club right in town. So it was often based around where you're from, your ethnicity. You would have a little club. But men and women do too. I think women like to belong to groups as well. But there's something about men and these sorts of groups, about belonging to a gang or a club, that just... It hits us somewhere, and it's very natural, and it transcends time, place, culture. You see it worldwide. But within those clubs and groups, you often see this intense factionalism, where people start disagreeing and they split off. And I know I mentioned this in an episode not that long ago, but you're often more at odds with people who used to be your friends than you are even your enemies. You almost hate your former friends more than you do your straight-up lifelong enemies. It's that sort of familiarity breeds contempt idea. And you see that in the mafia, where there's far more infighting within the same mafia family. And even beyond that, there's more infighting within the mafia itself than between the mafia and completely different organized crime groups of different ethnicities, of different backgrounds. So that's something you see play out. I've definitely noticed that in groups myself. While I've never been someone who's, aside from my elementary school gang, I've never been in a gang. I've never been part of a real club. But I've observed the way clubs will divide and these factions form, and people within the group are at odds with each other, and sometimes that means creating a whole new separate group. It's something we've seen in the Middle East, in the warring Middle East, where you have these Muslim groups, these Islamic groups like Al-Qaeda and ISIS, and those groups are the product of factionalism. You see these other smaller groups split off, where they were at first one. They were at first one group, and then there's some sort of disagreement over the way to do things, or maybe it's a disagreement over some sort of philosophical idea or belief, and you'll say it's basically splitting hairs, and the result is that the group then splits, and you have a whole new group who forms, and then they become a rival. It's something you see play out a lot whenever there's a group or a club or a gang or a terrorist organization or an organized crime group. It could be something totally safe and legitimate, or it could be something sinister and criminal and terroristic. It doesn't really matter what it is. Men like to form groups, and then they have disagreements, and those groups split. It's almost like watching some kind of cellular process play out, but with our instead of happening within our body, it's as part of these larger bodies that we are a part of, these larger things that we are connected to. Because human beings ourselves are cells. Our cells are cells. And we form cells within these groups. You know, you look at a mafia, you even hear that term. You talk about, you hear about terror cells. They even use the word cells. So this isn't some new idea, but you have to look at it as you would a larger body. But there is something in us. There's something in me, even. Even though I'm not someone who likes to join groups, I can still feel that pulling at me. And there are some people even today that I'm friends with, and I feel like we do form some sort of loose-knit gang. And we don't call it that, and we don't do anything that gangs do, but there's something in the way that we conduct ourselves. There's something in the way that I think we even see ourselves that is in line with that impulse. It's not that we try to do it. It's not that we want to do it. But something feels right. Something pulls us toward that. And it's not that much different than men forming hunting parties. It's not that much different from men splitting off into hunting groups. Men who are part of a tribe who then form a little hunting group who goes off. But as I was saying, it's not just an activity. It's not just, you know, forming a team and doing this very active, you know, whether it's playing a sport or hunting for animals to feed your tribe. It doesn't have to be that active. Men do this even if it just means sitting in a social club playing cards, even if it just means having drinks at the Eagles Club. There's still this need to do this and belong, and exclusivity is a big part of it. Boundaries are a big part of it. People don't want to join a club that anyone can join. They don't want to join a club that doesn't have some sort of set of rules or set of guidelines, some sort of foundation. And they don't want just anybody to join. They often you have to be sponsored in. The mafia requires that. You have to be proposed for membership, and you have to be vetted and brought in, and you have to have basically fulfilled certain requirements. And I don't mean murders, because that's a myth. It's a myth that mafia members have to commit murders to join. But you do have to meet certain qualifications. You do have to have certain characteristics. And it's the same thing for the Eagles Club. I know that the Eagles Club in town here requires you to have two sponsors. Two. And I don't know why. You know, I don't know what's so exclusive about the Eagles Club. You have to pay a fee and have two people who can speak for you, speak to your character. So that's a common thing you see, where you have to have a sponsor, you have to have someone who vouches for you. Even if what you end up doing as part of that club is meaningless and you don't really do much other than say, I'm a member, I can get in there, I can walk through that doorway and talk to those people, because a lot of clubs just end up being that. Or you sign your name on a list on the playground, and you never get the trading cards that you were told you would get for joining, but you still feel like joining. Incentives aside, you still feel like, I want to be a part of something. And we form gangs really in every respect, in every part of our lives, politically. You know, you can see politics as definitely a gang activity, even down to just the colors. We choose colors. We believe in this, and this is our gang. We're willing to fight you, and we will support members of our gang over members of your gang every time. Every time. But a member of one political gang killed a mob boss, or a mob underboss, a week ago today. And it's a weird time to be alive. I'm not saying that there weren't other weird events that happened in generations past. I'm not saying that, mafia members weren't killed in weird aberrational situations many years ago, because they were. You can always find weird anomalies. But this one stood out to me. It stood out to me as a sign of the times in which we live. When a member of a group that was once thought to be, you know, I'm not going to say all-powerful, because a lot of that is mythology, a lot of that is sensationalism, but the mafia has been thought to hold a certain degree of influence, and you don't think of just some random kid who probably texted with this guy's niece staging a hit on a mob leader out of nowhere and following through with it in between posting memes on Instagram. But it is the world in which we live. And that world is recalibrating. As far as I'm concerned, we're undergoing a period of recalibration. And that makes me think of printers. That makes me think of your computer printer. That's how I was introduced to the phrase calibration and calibrating. You put new ink in it and it tells you it's calibrating. And you never really know what that means. It's setting its alignments. It's setting its measurements. And I feel like that's an accurate way to see the world right now. And we ourselves are hopefully calibrating ourselves or recalibrating ourselves along with the greater calibration that is going on. But at the end of the day, maybe the world just is a big fucking computer printer. And it's going to be filled with all the frustrations of using that thing. Because what's up with the computer printers anyway? I feel like the rate of progress at which all other technology has moved has left computer printers way the fuck in the dust. They still seem just as bad as they did in 1996. And maybe I just don't have a nice enough computer printer. Maybe the people I know just don't have one of these really nice computer printers. But you would still think even the cheap ones would have moved along at a slightly faster rate. You would think they would still be just a little bit better. But maybe that's why the world is just like a computer printer. Maybe we expect it to move along at a much faster rate than it can. But it's still pretty much the same through and through over the years. And it just has to calibrate slightly as we change the ink in it. What about that?
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave, this golden land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, I see a land where children